This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Toy Story, the largest toy store in the U.S., files for bankruptcy as the former powerhouse becomes the latest victim of the upheaval in the industry. Retail revival, Best Buy came back from the brink by playing defense against Amazon, and its new playbook seems to be working. Houston after Harvey, with a shortage of workers, residents wonder when, if ever, they'll be able to rebuild. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Tuesday, September 19th. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm Sue Herrera. Tyler Matheson is off tonight. We begin tonight with a tale of two retailers. First, Toys R Us. The store that once dominated the industry has filed for bankruptcy. As we told you yesterday, the company has been crippled by increased competition, a mountain of debt, and a retail business that's being turned upside down. The bankruptcy is among the largest ever by a specialty retailer, and it could usher in changes to the company's nearly 1,600 stores. Kate Rogers is at a Toys R Us in Paramus, New Jersey.
I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us.
Despite the wishful thinking in their TV commercials, we all grew older. And as a company, Toys R Us is no exception.
The bankruptcy itself is a Toys R Us story, obviously. But I think that when you look at retail, the way it's being portrayed in the market right now is that it's under siege. And there are some retailers that are challenged, and Toys was in that camp.
During a time when consumers are increasingly turning to online shopping to compare prices, the iconic toy retailer says it plans to restructure $5 billion in debt. Toys R Us has shown signs of struggle in recent years, prepping plans for an initial public offering in 2010, then reversing course in 2013. It also closed its flagship Times Square retail store in 2015.
It is simply one of the great post-war retail businesses of America.
This wasn't always the case. Toys R Us grew from some 350 stores in the 1980s to more than 1,600 stores around the globe today. But as shoppers turn to the web, Amazon is stealing market share. While the toy industry grew just 5% in 2016, Amazon experienced 24% growth in its toy sales.
Preferred is probably not leaving the house and shopping online. So no, I typically actually was just saying this morning, I don't really ever come to the store, especially Toys R Us.
Toys R Us has not announced any store closures or layoffs. In fact, it says it expects to announce plans to hire thousands more workers during peak holiday season. Customers can rest assured. The toy chain says they will not see any disruption to their rewards programs and gift cards won't expire. But that hasn't stopped nervous shoppers from rushing to stores today to use their gift cards.
Someone had posted the rumor that was going around that they were closing, and if you have gift cards to go out and apparently spend them by the end of the week because they weren't going to be good anymore.
Rumor has it that Toys R Us is claiming bankruptcy, and once that happens, our gift cards go to a $0 balance.
Toys R Us isn't alone in its struggles. In fact, it joins other major retailers Payless and Radio Shack in filing for bankruptcy in 2017. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Kate Rogers in Paramus, New Jersey.
And then there's Best Buy. Just a few years ago, that company was on death's door. Back then, its new CEO decided to close some stores and focus on its online business, and that strategy helped turn the company around. Today, the consumer electronics chain held its first investor meeting in 5 years, and the message was starkly different from the last one in 2012. Courtney Reagan is at Best Buy headquarters in Richfield, Minnesota.
It's a different feeling at Best Buy headquarters these days. Just 5 years ago, many wondered if the consumer electronics retailer was viable in the age of Amazon.
We had negative comps. Our margins were going down. There was questions about whether we were going to survive.
CEO Hubert Joly was new to the job then and had a plan to turn it around.
We've had 4 years of positive comps. Our margins have expanded. We have been, in the last 5 years, in the top 10% of the S&P 500 from a total shareholder return standpoint. Customer satisfaction is up. We're gaining share, so we've become relevant again.
Joly says he fixed what was wrong. Now, Wall Street analysts say he needs to find growth.
Best Buy today is much better equipped to deal with or compete with Amazon. To stay relevant is, can they continue to appeal to that consumer, the consumer who wants both the online and in-store shopping experience?
One key category Best Buy is focusing on is the connected home, with both products and service. Industry estimates forecast the connected home market could be worth $50 billion worldwide by 2021. Piper Jaffray says Best Buy could capture 10% of the U.S. smart home market, adding substantially to sales.
With its new in-home advisor network, experts will actually come to your home, help you figure out how to make your home smarter, more connected, install things like security systems and even smart doorbells.
Best Buy is also expanding its new Total Tech Support program, a step beyond its Geek Squad.
It covers every technology product you have in your home, whether or not you bought it at Best Buy, and we're going to help you. So as an example, you know, if Netflix is not working tonight, is it because of Netflix? Is it the pipe getting into the home? Is it the Wi-Fi? Is it the TV? Is it the streaming device? Honey, please help me. And we are honey.
It's not the only retailer wanting to save the tech day and connect your home. While still small, Amazon has its own tech rescue team. And Amazon's formidable online dominance is one of the reasons Best Buy had to undergo its transformation in the first place. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Courtney Reagan in Richfield, Minnesota.
But today, Wall Street wasn't buying Best Buy's growth story. The company said it expects its long-term earnings to come in below Wall Street estimates, and shares took a tumble off 8%. In another sign of the changing retail times, Kohl's will let Amazon customers return items at some of their stores. The retailer will pack and ship the merchandise back to the online retailer for free. Earlier this month, Kohl's announced plans to sell the Alexa-enabled Echo home speaker, Fire TV, and other Amazon-branded devices in 10 of its stores. On Wall Street, stocks edged higher and closed at record levels as investors held off on making any big investments ahead of the Fed's upcoming policy announcement, and we'll have more on that in just a minute. This afternoon, traders were also keeping watch over a powerful earthquake which rocked Mexico City. Buildings collapsed, airports closed, and Mexican stocks fell before trading was halted. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 39 points to 22,370. The Nasdaq was up 6, and the S&P 500 added almost 3. In Washington, Federal Reserve policymakers met for the first day of a two-day meeting. An interest rate hike is not expected to be announced tomorrow, but many are looking for details on the central bank's plan to pare back its bond holdings. Steve Leisman takes a look at what else Wall Street is looking for.
The CNBC Fed survey for September showing no change expected in rates at the end of this meeting here. Rates, 100% of our 42 respondents expecting rates to remain unchanged after the meeting and the announcement tomorrow. The third rate hike, though, 76% do believe there will be another quarter point hike before the end of the year. That's a little bit higher than market prices might suggest. And finally, the balance sheet, 68% say by October, the Federal Reserve will begin to reduce that $4.5 trillion balance sheet. As for the outlook for rates, they have come down compared, for example, from our March survey. The same for 2017, but look what happened for 2018. Down by 0.3%, down by 0.2% for 2019 to 2.5%. The long run rate, though, we're going to watch that tomorrow to see if Fed officials are bringing down their estimate for how far they have to go in this rate cycle. As for their expectations for the balance sheet, it's expected to go down from $4.5 trillion down to $2.4 trillion. But don't get too excited. Some people are explaining this to watching paint dry. It's going to take 4.4 years to get there. We also asked an interesting question here, which is how low can the unemployment rate go before it sparks inflation? 3.7%. That's pretty much below the 4% level on the 4.3% or 4.4% level where we are right now. So there's room to run, according to these respondents, before inflation is sparked. But note this, 45% say there is little or no connection of the unemployment rate to inflation. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Steve Leisman.
Many on Wall Street were also watching events at the United Nations. In his first address to the UN, President Trump threatened to, quote, totally destroy North Korea if the U.S. is forced to defend itself or its allies in East Asia.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able. But hopefully, this will not be necessary. That's what the United Nations is all about. That's what the United Nations is for.
The North Korean ambassador to the UN walked out before President Trump's speech began. The Senate easily passed a nearly $700 billion defense bill late yesterday. The measure would put the U.S. armed forces on track for a bigger budget than at any time during the wars in Iraq and in Afghanistan. The bill calls for expanded missile defenses in response to those escalating tensions with North Korea. And a new effort to reform the health care system is gaining steam in the Senate. The Graham-Cassidy bill would repeal the infrastructure of the Affordable Care Act, but it would leave the taxes in place and funnel that revenue towards the states. The White House backs the bill, so does the Speaker of the House, and the bill's sponsor, Lindsey Graham, appears optimistic.
We're going to get 50 Republican votes, and I make a prediction. There are going to be a lot of Democrats struggling with a no vote because at least eight of them, their states do far better than Obamacare in terms of funding, and they have more control over the money. And that's going to be a hard no.
Andrew Friedman is the principal at the Washington Update, and he joins us now to discuss this latest effort. Good to see you again, Andrew. Welcome back.
Hi, Sue. How are you?
I'm good. How do you handicap the odds on this? Because what we're hearing from Republican leaders is that they kind of feel like this is it, that this is their last best bet to getting health care reform through.
Well, it's probably their last bet. I'll agree with that. The concern many have expressed about the bill, and as Senator Graham noted, some states do better under this bill. They get more money from the federal government for their health care system than they do now, or they would get more. But what that does is it's taking money away from states that expanded Medicaid mm-hmm. and provided free insurance to all lower-income people. They're left holding the bag. They don't get as much money from the federal government, which means many of the constituents and residents in those states are going to lose insurance that they currently have under the ACA. And I think that will be a problem for senators and governors in those states.
Do you think that they have the votes? I mean, Senator Graham seemed to think they do, but as you know, it always comes down to the wire.
It sure does. Well, first of all, they're not going to get Democratic votes. That's hyperbole. The question is, will the Republicans that held out on the prior attempt to fix the ACA support this attempt? We don't know. And one problem that we are facing is we're not going to have an estimate from the Congressional Budget Office as to how many people lose insurance and how high premiums would go under this legislation. So everybody's going to be shooting blind. My guess is, and we'll have to see when it comes right down to it, I think that enough Republicans that did not support the prior attempt are probably not going to support this attempt. They're worried about constituents losing insurance mm-hmm. who are used to having it.
You know, it says here that it would restructure the ACA waivers to let states more easily drop certain insurance rules. What rules would that refer to? And is that another contentious piece of the plan or not?
Well, it could be. What it would allow the states to do, as I understand it, is to determine what types of diseases or maladies that the insurance is required to cover, which means that states could decide that insurance purchased might not have to cover, you know, pick a disease or pick a condition. And that means, again, people could be left holding the bag in the sense that they have to pay for their own medical procedures. And that, too, means people may be left with unexpectedly bad results. Mm.
We will see. Andrew, good to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Andrew Friedman with the Washington Update. And still ahead, rebuilding Houston after Hurricane Harvey.
Thousands of Houston homeowners need skilled workers to help them rebuild their homes, and they need them fast. But that's just not going to happen. We'll tell you why coming up on Nightly Business Report.
A cyber attack and Hurricane Harvey are causing problems for FedEx. The logistics company is blaming those two events for a decline in profit in the most recent quarter, which saw revenue come in just shy of estimates. The company also cut its earnings guidance for the full year. Investors showed their disappointment, sending the stock lower in initial after-hours trading. Dominic Chu has more on FedEx quarter.
Shipping and logistics giant FedEx reported quarterly earnings and sales that included the effects of not just Hurricane Harvey, but also a larger-scale cyber attack on its European shipping operations. The TNT Express unit, which FedEx bought last year to increase its footprint in Europe, suffered a big cyber attack that hampered many of its operations. Earnings per share were lowered by 79 cents because of the attack, and lowered by another 2 cents per share, given the effects of Hurricane Harvey on its operations in the Texas and Louisiana Gulf Coast region. FedEx also lowered its full-year expectations because of the TNT cyber attack. It did say that substantially all TNT Express critical operation systems have been restored, but that shipping volumes, sales, and profits are still below previous levels. Remember also that the company said yesterday it was going to raise shipping rates on certain services beginning next year. The size and scope of just how badly FedEx was hurt by the cyber attacks is one of the biggest things to focus on in the earnings report. And going forward, investors will be looking for any tea leaves or any kind of guidance the company has on how the holiday shipping season is expected to shape up. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Dominic Chu.
There are new reports tonight that Equifax was hit by a breach months before the big one. The first breach reportedly happened in March, but Equifax told Bloomberg News that the intrusion was not related to the one in late July, which compromised the personal information of 143 million users. Some have criticized Equifax handling of the cyber attack, including not being able to identify whose information was even stolen. But Equifax is not alone. Other companies like Yahoo and Target also struggled to understand the severity of their own attacks. And as Andrea Day reports, some companies have no response plan at all.
If we look at most of the major breaches that have made it in the news, the bungled response actually causes more damage to the company's brand and reputation than the breach did itself.
The full damage to Equifax? Only time will tell. But if you think most businesses are ready for a hit, think again.
Over 75% of organizations throughout the world actually don't have incident response plans in place.
That reality, creating a business opportunity for firms like IBM Security, now helping companies with challenges like navigating a slew of laws.
There are 47 different breach disclosure laws in the 50 U.S. states.
Like this, California requires notification even if encrypted information was breached. New York mandates state agencies are notified. And nationwide, if health information was breached, you may be required to notify the media. Meanwhile, Alabama, New Mexico, and South Dakota have no data breach laws. And when it comes to a hack, the old adage is true: time is money.
If organizations can respond and contain a breach within 30 days or less, they tend to save $1 million over those organizations that don't.
Even internet companies are not immune. Yahoo lost $350 million on its merger with Verizon after breaches that took years to fix were revealed. IBM Security offers incident response training services in a multi-million dollar facility called the Cyber Range.
It's an area where companies can come in and actually practice a breach and the response to that breach on a fictitious company.
Cybersecurity and the protection of our client information and client funds is the lifeblood of this company.
The payroll and human resources company ADP recently put their C-level execs through IBM's high-tech boot camp.
It's as important for me to understand how to respond during a crisis as it is for my team to be able to operate in a crisis.
And the Cyber Range can simulate common cyber attacks, allowing execs to train on breach response before customer data is even at risk. Since cyber criminals' tactics are constantly changing, the boot camp also evolves to include new attacks. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Andrea Day.
Sprint and T-Mobile are reportedly in merger talks again, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. After a potential tie-up between the two telecoms was derailed by regulators in 2014, reports surfaced earlier this year that the companies were considering combining. And now CNBC says Sprint and T-Mobile are in active discussions about a stock-for-stock merger where T-Mobile's parent would become the majority owner. Sprint shares rose nearly 7% to $8.20. Shares of T-Mobile were higher by 5% to $65.42. Cereal giant Post is adding more products to its portfolio with its $1.5 billion deal to buy packaged foods company Bob Evans Farms. Bob Evans says it was the refrigerated foods division that really sealed the deal.
if you look at what attracted Post to Bob Evans, it was really our refrigerated side dish business. So our refrigerated side dish business that we've been in now 20 years has been growing double digits for the last 20 years. We have about a 50% market share and growing at a rate that far exceeds our competitors.
Shares of Post were slightly higher to $86.36. Bob Evans shares popped 6% to $77.41. The government is reportedly taking steps to make it easier for American gun makers to sell small arms to foreigners. That's according to Reuters. The report said new rules would cut regulatory costs and potentially lead to more job creation in the U.S. That was good news for the gun makers Sturm Ruger and American Outdoor Brands. Sturm Ruger shares jumped 13% to $54.35. Shares of American Outdoor Brands were higher by 10% to $15.70. And after the bell, Bed Bath & Beyond reported disappointing profits and weaker-than-expected sales growth. The home goods retailer cited a number of issues, including restructuring charges and the impact from Hurricane Harvey. Shares initially plunged in the extended hours session and also ended the regular day down about 1% to $27.03. Home building activity fell for a second straight month in August, thanks to a decline in housing starts for multifamily dwellings. But the report wasn't all negative. Building permits, an indicator of future activity, hit a seven-month high. Economists expect to see swings in the data in the coming months as a result of Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. And it's been nearly 3 weeks since Hurricane Harvey finally moved out of Houston, but the rebuilding has barely begun. For tens of thousands of homeowners, it could take years to get help. Diana Olick is there.
On street after street, Houston's houses are inside out. Rotting remnants of comfort and necessity sit on former front lawns in piles higher than homeowners' heads.
Ultimately ended up about 4 feet.
Jennifer and Andy Taylor gutted their home themselves and with a little help.
We had about 25 friends and family that we called, Facebook, texted, phone calls, and we had an army of friends and family come out with some church volunteers as well.
To do all this.
You guys seem incredibly calm and zen about this.
We've had our moments, to be sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but a lot of those moments were really being touched by the outreach.
The outreach from volunteers with food, clothing, anything they needed, helped them process those horrific days of the hurricane when everything they had disappeared underwater. And that is why they wanted to stay.
The fabric of the community has been amazing. And we've been here 14 years. We knew that. But to feel it firsthand has been amazing.
Hundreds of Houston homeowners need skilled workers to help them rebuild their houses, and they need them fast. But that's just not going to happen.
There's not enough people to put them back together. There's not enough workers. There's not enough material. There's not enough time.
Contractor Leslie King has sobering news for all the people calling her daily.
Most of us who are reputable contractors will tell you that we already have 50 people on our list.
Houston had a severe labor shortage before the storm. Houston builders permitted 27,000 new homes this year. But now, with more than 30,000 additional homes destroyed and even more damaged, the shortage is so much worse. King and the National Association of Home Builders are asking the Trump administration to let more workers in the country, even if only temporarily.
I'd ask them to please let anybody who wants to come work who's willing to make a dollar and willing to pay some taxes, let them come, please. We need them.
Because the work is still piling up. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Houston.
And to read more about post-Harvey rebuilding in Houston, you can head to our website, NBR.com. Coming up, thousands of GM workers walk off the job, and NAFTA negotiations are at the heart of that strike. Ford is trimming production lines at 5 North American plants, including 3 in the U.S. All of the plants manufacture cars, not SUVs or trucks. Ford is scheduling 1 to 3 weeks of downtime to lessen unsold car inventory on dealer lots. And General Motors is facing its first strike in Canada since the mid-1990s. Workers at the company's plant in Ingersoll, Ontario, have walked off the job after negotiations failed to produce a new contract. Phil LeBeau has more on the strike and why it's being watched.
When workers walked off the job at GM's plant in southeast Canada, it was the latest indication automakers are thinking twice before deciding where they build cars and trucks in North America. The GM plant in Ingersoll, Ontario, employs roughly 3,000 workers who build the Chevy Equinox SUV. Their primary issue? Job security. They want a GM commitment to build another model at the plant. The workers in Canada used to build the GMC Terrain. But earlier this year, General Motors moved production of that SUV to a plant in Mexico. And that's at the heart of this strike. GM exports more vehicles from Mexico and Canada than any other automaker. And before it adds or subtracts production to plants north and south of the border, it's watching to see what happens with the North American Free Trade Agreement. If NAFTA is ripped up or dramatically altered, GM may think twice about how many vehicles it builds in Mexico and Canada. In the meantime, this strike is not stopping the sale of GM's best-selling SUV. The Chevy Equinox is still being built at a GM plant in Mexico.
So the Chevy Equinox supply that's heading into showrooms continues, albeit at a slightly slower pace. Phil LeBeau, Nightly Business Report, Chicago.
And that is Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us. Have a great evening, everybody, and we will see you right back here tomorrow.